Welcome to another episode of the RAG podcast. And for those of you who don't know, the RAG stands for Recruitment Agency Growth. Since early 2019, I've been interviewing the most successful and innovative recruitment owners to learn how they rose to the top of their game. In season 7, I'm going to be having raw, authentic, and insightful conversations with agency owners, entrepreneurs, leaders, people across the industry. And I want to be learning about their ambitions, what's happening behind the scenes in their agencies today, and their plans to navigate difficult market conditions. I'll be bringing you the latest and greatest recruitment stories every single week on Wednesdays at noon across multiple platforms. Stay tuned. Hello and welcome back to another episode of the RAG podcast. On this week's show, I'm super excited to be joined again by Ephraim Stevenson. Ephraim is the CEO and founder of Collar Talent Group, the fastest growing recruitment company in Australia. I interviewed Ephraim just over a year ago when they were just over a year old, and he'd reached 100 headcount in 12 months. They're now over 140 people with 500, that's 500 years of recruitment experience under one roof. In this episode, we talk about how he's grown to 14 offices across the country, and he's done it through strategically taking the most experienced and most highest regarded recruiters from his competition and dropping them into the business. So he's built a leadership function of the best people in Australia, and now he's building around it in every discipline and industry that you can think of relating to high volume staffing accounts. Ephraim, as always, is super honest, super open. We talk about the things he's got wrong, the things that have gone well since we last interviewed. And as always, he's got bags of energy and he's fun to be around. So if you're looking to grow your business with scale at speed, you've got to listen to this one. Without further ado, Ephraim, welcome back for the second time to the RAG podcast.
Thank you very much, Sean.
It's great to have you on. It is just about 13 and a half months since we had our previous episode, the 6th of December, 2022. Life's changed a lot since then for both of us.
It has, mate.
So I'm excited to get into this. Before we do, Ephraim, do us a favor. Anyone who's not listened to episode one doesn't know who you are. Just give us that bird's eye view of you, the company, what Collar Group do, people, headcount, niche, that kind of stuff. And then we'll go and discuss the rest.
Fantastic. Thanks, mate. Yeah, guys. So Ephraim Stevenson, I'm the founder and CEO of a company called Collar Talent Group. Collar Talent Group was launched in Australia in July of 2021. And over the last 2.5 years, we've scaled to now 14 offices around Australia. We've got circa about 1,000 employees in the business, from our internal staff to obviously our casual workforce. Internal staff is sitting circa about 140 across the board, including back office. We specialize in multiple revenue streams. High volume accounts is ultimately where the business is at. Every kind of industry. So whether that's, you know, your facilities management, mining, aged care, healthcare, software and IT, finance, accounting, etc. Where our point of difference has been is in the level and I guess the level of experience of consultants that we've hired. So combined, we've got over 500 years worth of recruitment knowledge and experience under the collar, I guess, bonnet, if you like, obviously amongst the 140 team. But the types of people we've been hiring, Sean, are people from, you know, the likes of the leading recruitment firms globally. So, you know, the top three, top four recruitment firms. Strategically identifying key leaders within those businesses that are ultimately looking for a change, a career change, looking to grow something. And, you know, this, we've got a saying in this business, no one person's bigger than Collar, not even myself. And I think that is why we have been so successful. It's bringing all that knowledge, all that experience together, and kind of cutting out all the noise, you know, basically providing best systems, processes, procedures, you know, best tech stack, marketing, branding, and everything else that kind of goes hand in hand with that has really allowed Collar to, you know, go from a one-man band, being myself obviously in an office, you know, in those first invoice went out mid-October 2021. In our first kind of 7-8 months of trading, we did 7 million in revenue. Our first full financial year, we did 45 million in revenue. This financial year, we've already exceeded basically last year's in our first 6 months. So we're well on track to double again this financial year. And the numbers for this financial year we're forecasting is circa about 110 million. And for the next kind of 2 years, so our three-year business plan, including this year. So this year's idea, we wanted to be sitting around about that 120 mark. And we're confident we'll pick that back up into the next financial year. So the next financial year, we're actually forecasting 300 million. in turnover. And then basically for the second year, which is year three, we're forecasting a annual revenue of $500 million.
What percentage of revenue do you spit out as net fee income when you get rid of all the contractor payments?
Yes. Yeah, so ultimately, mate, we're actually across the entire business, albeit it's very much blue collar kind of driven from a contracting number point of view. You know, we're coming in at 13% across the board. You know, so from a GP point of view, it's actually a really healthy business, especially in the high volume blue collar space, which is historically in Australia, very low margin. And obviously comes with quite a lot of headaches. And that's historically why, I guess, the top five, you know, recruitment brands globally have really dominated that space. And I think for us as a business, we're winning these accounts really by, you know, it's not always price point driven. It's actually service deliverables. It's reputation, you know, it's speed to market, which is what a lot of companies are talking about these days. And also, I guess, just coming into the recruitment landscape with a different fresh pair of eyes, you know, not kind of, you know, just going with the mundane and just, you know, filling jobs for the sake of filling jobs for us. You know, again, it's a cliche and every agency is telling you the same thing on all of your podcasts that you do. They've all got their point of difference. But I think the thing for us is never losing sight of our internal staff. You know, if we get that piece really well down pat, and that's what we talked about on the first show, mate, was obviously, you know, the monthly commissions and those threshold targets, you know, treating everyone as you would expect to be treated in recruitment. If you kind of combine all that together, you know, that is a recipe for an incredible business, you know, high performing business, everyone singing and dancing, all moving in the same direction. Now, don't get me wrong, this hasn't been a perfect scale, you know, a perfect growth. We've obviously been going for 2.5 years and there's a hell of a lot of lessons that I've learned along the way. You know, but I think for me as a, I guess, as a recruiter, what excites me is, you know, is walking into an office like Colin. You can walk into any of the offices around the country and you'll get the same vibe, the same feel, the same energy, the same passion. The culture is infectious in our business. And that's, again, just going back to the point I was trying to make earlier, was in the sense that this whole business has been set up about attracting the best recruiters and retaining the best recruiters in the industry. And we will continue to do that. And that's been our biggest, you know, I guess our biggest focus. I'm still proud to say, mate, less than 10% of our entire workforce of the 140 have come through RectorX. The rest have all come directly to us. They've all, you know, come through.
And these are they all experienced people? Are you going after that academy trainee route as well? Or?
Oh, look, we certainly do have, you know, some more junior consultants in the business. And the associate program is definitely something that we're actually starting to roll out. We've just actually hired... had three strategic hires come in from one of the top three, basically recruitment firms globally. And that combined experience is circa about 70 years of experience we've pulled just from those hires out of one business. And I say pulled, they went through their own changes in turn. I'll be very clear on this. I've been called up on this before. We're not intentionally pulling people out of business. This top tier basically made a number of redundancies. And on the back end of that, we were able to piggyback and strategically determine, obviously, who we wanted in the business. Again, I don't know of any other recruitment agency in Australia that, you know, could boast having two managing directors. We've got a managing director, Rachel, who basically manages the entire West Coast of our business. And then we've got Tim James, who's recently joined us from Hayes. He was at Hayes for about 30 years. Tim manages the whole East Coast for us. So between the three of us, we're responsible for the day-to-day management of this, what has become a business that is just continue to snowball. And that is exciting for me, I guess, as an owner of a business, to know that, you know, arguably between the two leaders there, you know, they've both got just as much experience as me. Obviously, I'm coming from a startup background, entrepreneur, 15 recruitment businesses that I founded or co-founded. That combined with extensive experience from literally the top two recruitment agency globally. I don't see how we couldn't succeed, really.
So the big gap for you was getting the minds of people that have already done it for the big players and bringing them in, right? Yeah. That was like essential to surround yourself with those people.
Yeah, especially around that kind of speed to market, compliance, mobilization. When we're talking large volume accounts, that's what they expect. They don't want to be teaching or training a new supplier as to how they operate. Like, it's commercially, it's just not viable. So when you actually hire individuals that already have that kind of knowledge, that nous, that experience in working in similar types of accounts, it just adds so much value to what we do as a business. And most importantly, I think from a client point of view, it gives them the satisfaction knowing that, you know, we're not just giving it lip service. We've actually got runs on the board. I mean, you know, we posted just after the new year, we've now made over 20,000 placements since we've launched. That's 20,000 people. That's 20,000 jobs filled. right, since we've launched as a business. And that is just...
That's a lot of people.
It's extraordinary. Yeah. So again, but we're 2.5 years old, mate. That, for me, that's what I keep pinching myself every day. It's just going, you know, I'm the luckiest man, and everyone's going to say this, I guess, but I honestly feel like I'm the luckiest man in the world in recruitment to be involved in a business with so many big personalities who are all literally wanting to put collar on the map. You know, it just makes my job as a leader that much easier to know that we're all in sync and we're all...
What's the vision then for growing this multidisciplined business? Because the challenge with collar will always be that, you know, at a company level, you're doing too many things. And this is why you guys have been on my bootcamp, to try and upskill the individuals within each unit to be able to brand themselves so that the business can collectively grow in any direction it wants through the people, rather than relying on a campaign from collar to do miners on Western Australia as well as software developers on East. It just doesn't work. So talk us through the vision. How are you getting, you know, such different teams all getting traction under one banner in such a short amount of time?
Well, I guess there's no real, correct answer to this other than the business development strategy that we have as an organization is arguably what has put us on the map, right? So I think when we talked back in December, I was talking about, you know, government tenders, how we were really keen to obviously explore that, get involved. So we launched that in January. So we spoke to you in December, launched that in January. And that team has now grown to a team of three. In the year 2023, we've submitted 28 tenders. We won 26 of them. And the other two, basically, we actually bowed out due to contractual, commercially, I just wasn't interested in signing these two additional contracts. So the tenders that we've won, and it's a mixture of public, private, government, federal, state, local, healthcare, aged care. So combination of tenders across those spaces. If we calculate the actual spend to those tenders that we've won in 2023, and we put all that in a pot, bear in mind, some of these contracts are 2, 3, 5, 10 years. Some of them have 50 agencies on, some of them have 5, some might only have 2 on. But if we combine the total spend for those tenders that we've won in 23, it was over $1 billion worth of work for our business to get stuck into. Now, again, that's on panel, so we can't guarantee that we're going to get 5% of that, 10% of that. But let's put that into numbers, right? 5% of $1 billion, 10% of $1 billion. That's a huge revenue to our business. The exciting thing with that side of the organization is it's tendered, it's won, it's priced correctly. You know, you've got your margins basically in line and it's fixed and you're guaranteed for the next, 12 months, 24, 36, however long the contract is. So that is attracting a lot of talent into our business. Those recruiters that historically don't necessarily like the business development side of recruitment, and want to work more in an account management role where it allows us to attract and obviously, you know, really deliver on those contracts. We've then got the traditional recruitment, right? So basically your exec search, your perm, obviously, and your casual, and contracts that we might be on a preferred supply agreement, but it's not tendered. So it's PSA, but again, you're on panel. But again, the accounts that we've won and we're working with are arguably some of the biggest accounts in Australia. So again, from a recruitment point of view, recruiters who are historically sitting in smaller 2, 3, 4, 5, 10-man businesses or working for a large national multinational, most of those career development opportunities to manage those accounts are already taken. Again, that's a huge competitive advantage for us. We're winning accounts and structuring a dedicated account management team around each of those accounts. So if it's a national account, they'll have an account manager in every office or every major state around Australia. We then pair them up with recruitment mobilization. So the way the business is set up, there's always support. Whatever role you're in, you've always got support to make sure that basically you're able to deliver your role to the best of your ability. Now, a lot of people make transitions, so they might, they might work in recruitment mobilization, for example, but they might tap into multiple revenue streams depending on how busy they are. And for us, again, that's been a real game changer where we've looked at our internal staff, and this is honestly why I think they're joining, mate. Obviously, we're looking at our internal staff and going, okay, from a time point of view, what is the time to speed to market, interview time, process, references, compliance. And that's when we were actually taking too long to kind of mobilize. Nothing that we could do about it. It was the technology that we were using. So that's why we made the call. And we only announced this week that we're actually going to be the first recruitment agency in Australia to build Salesforce from the ground up. It's going to be hosted, well, Target Recruit are going to be the main CRM, basically on the Salesforce platform for us. This is over $500,000 build, basically, for us as an organization. But that customer and candidate experience is our number one priority. But we can only get there if by listening to our account managers, listening to our internal recruitment teams. And that is spreading like wildfire in the industry, where you've got recruiters internally in the business, I guess, coming to you as a leader with their concerns and their frustrations around technology, around speed to market, and you're actually doing something about it. And I think that's what, again, when our recruiters are speaking to their friends, obviously in the industry, people can actually see that we're actually doing something about it, and we're not just giving it lip service. And I feel confident, mate, if we were to put a list together of everything that I said on our call back in December of 22, I'm confident we've either exceeded what I said I was going to do, or it's in the pipeline and it's actually running as it is at the moment. And for me, I think that's probably one of my biggest achievements, in the sense that it gets very lonely at the top. And I think I said this to you last time, you know, so when you basically run your own business, who do you report into? You've only really got sanity checks from within the industry. Do you know what I mean? To back up and to kind of qualify what you're actually doing is actually working. And as an organization, you know, we won three awards last year, mate, over in London, Investors and People Award. And for us, not only are we the only recruitment agency to have won awards at that event, but we won three major awards. It's never been done in Investors and People history that an agency's taken out. We're nominated for five awards and we took home three awards, and that's never been done. So when Holler's also kind of disrupting industries as well from that point of view, and we're getting the acknowledgement, we're getting the recognition. Our managing director was up for Managing Director of the Year Award with the CEO Magazine CEO Awards last year. And I was fortunate enough to be up for a CEO of the Year Award from the 20 to 100 million category. Again, that's never been done before. The previous year I'd won the Startup, obviously CEO Award. So to win back-to-back awards, that's putting Collar well and truly on the map with some senior executives, some senior leaders in the recruitment space. That combined with everything that we're doing from a brand marketing, just relaunched a new website, relaunched obviously a big advertising campaign. We've got the Western Force, obviously a union team that we sponsor, and that's a huge sponsorship package for us this year. It's now about just pushing the brand out there, and that's what's attracting everyone into the business. So I know it's kind of a long-winded question as to how we're doing it, but I can't just say it's one thing that's working. I think it's a combination of everything.
How are you getting to the tenders in the first place? So I get the more accounts you win, the more people want to work for you, and there's buzz. I get all that. I get the tech. I understand all that. But the bit that I think my listeners are going to be thinking is, well, how are you getting there in the first place? You're 2.5 years on the map. People don't know you. You might be fighting against Randstad and Adecco and Hayes and Robert Walters and all these big brands that have been around for years. How are you even getting in the room?
Again, I'm fortunate enough to surround myself with some incredible tender writers. And Alfred Wilkinson, who's in our business, he worked for one of our major competitors for about 9 years. He actually came over from Chandler McLeod. And Alfred was the one solely responsible for writing Chandler McLeod's tenders for 8 years. He'd done that, and he'd been very, very successful at it. And fortunate for me, Alfred was keen to join Collar. And he came on board, and his skill set is...
But can anyone, as long as you've got the ability to write a tender, can anyone join the tender?
You absolutely can. There is a real art of writing tenders. Right. And for those businesses out there that are keen to look into tenders, happy for anyone to reach out to me and I can point you in the direction. It's really not as hard as people think it is. However, the delivery side is something you need to just be very careful of. Ultimately, you'll get one opportunity at these tenders. What you do with it is really down to yourself. But, you know, obviously, if you win a tender and you're not delivering on that tender, you're basically from a PR point of view, damage reputation, you know, you're overpromising, under-delivering, is not looked upon, obviously, favorably in any industry, never mind recruitment. But, yeah, writing tenders, mate, it is an art to it. Alfred is arguably, I'd put him in the top five people I've ever worked with in recruitment in 23 years, mate. We're very, very fortunate to have him in the business, and we've got big plans, obviously, for him. He's, again, I've talked to you about the tenders we've won, mate. We've still got in the pipeline over 30 tenders that are due to drop, which dwarf 2023's wins.
So what happens then? So let's say, how do you plan for that? Because you've got 140 people. I imagine they're busy. You've not got a lot of people just sat on a bench hoping for the next tender to drop.
Yeah.
So you've got all these new ones that you're all... Do you have like a blueprint for the team that if it signs, you've got a certain amount of time to hire X, Y, and Z and put a skeleton team in and then you build around that or something?
Yeah. So we've actually hired an internal recruiter whose job is solely to talent map our industries and our basically ultimately the revenue streams that we're going after. Again, a lot of the tenders that we're going in for are strategic tenders. We've already got the teams to be able to deliver on it. Yes, we would need to obviously bolster those teams. There's no ifs or buts. But I never want to work on something that I can't deliver on. I don't want to overpromise and underdeliver on any opportunity. Some of the tenders that we've won so far this year in 2024, I can't actually announce yet, but some of them, mate, are, again, I'm pinching myself. We're talking about Hollis supplying basically staff to major sporting events, basically, around the country. We're talking about Collar basically partnering with the largest aged care provider in Australia. Collar being a preferred supplier to the largest healthcare provider in Australia. There's all these conversations going that is just bringing in more and more work, and it's attracting more candidates into the business. Because ultimately, it's all great winning all this work, mate. But if you haven't got the candidates to be able to fill those positions, then everyone's in the wrong job.
So that's my question. Yeah. Like, if we look at the actual detail answer to, right, so you signed the biggest aged care provider in Australia on the 1st of January, right? Hypothetical. Yeah. What do you do next? Like, specifically, how do you ensure that, how much lead time do you get to prepare the team and all these things? Like, this is what's going through my
head. Okay, sorry, mate. So with that particular one, that's been in the works for the last 6 months. We've already got the team who are servicing this client. They decided to go out to tender because they wanted to dwindle their panel down to basically to a small number of key suppliers. So we obviously put our best price in, obviously go through the health and safety, quality, well-being, return to work, everything that you need to do, obviously from a compliance point of view. And you deliver on it. I mean, again, it really comes down to, mate, you're not going to be putting a tender in for something that you can't deliver on, right? So for us, we've got the back office team to be able to deliver. We've got the account management team, and also we've got the leadership team. So far this year, in the last 2 months, we've hired an additional 25 consultants. So that'll bolster our numbers up to the 160 mark, who are obviously staggered starts throughout the next couple of months. And we'll do those staggered starts based on contracts being released, contracts obviously being awarded, but also in regards to any of the contracts that we're working on that may obviously have maybe a shutdown. So therefore, it's all hands on deck. There's more obviously staff that are actually required for that particular client. To be honest with you, mate, it's not rocket science. It's making sure that ultimately you've got the team that can have that client interaction day to day, account management, but then you've got the recruitment mobilization team who partner with the account manager to make sure they're delivering each and every assignment.
Will they all work on multiple accounts? They work on multiple accounts?
Yeah, but within the same industry. So you can imagine aged care has its own dedicated aged care team. So there's circa about 30 consultants, about 40 consultants across aged care, healthcare combined. You then look at the mining, well, that's a team of 15. Insurance, that's a team of 3, et cetera. What is interesting, I mean, even the insurance team that we've launched, and James joined us with Abby probably October time last year. They've just hired basically their first consultant in Sydney. They're looking at another consultant over here in Perth at the moment. And that's all been done with inside 3 to 4 months. So the proof is in the pudding for recruiters that are sitting on the fence, maybe wanting to go and work for themselves, set up their own agency, that we've got people in this business that have previously worked for themselves, previously run their own recruitment agency, and have just gone, it's just too difficult. Too much paperwork, too much admin, too much chasing finance. And they prove to be exceptional billers in our business because we could just let them get on and do what they do best, right? Without all the noise.
So this is where I'm at with this, listening to what you've said.
Yeah.
And obviously I'm watching a lot of what you're doing and I've been, we've worked with you guys. So correct me if I'm wrong. Mm. Your strategy is market map. Pick areas you want to grow into.
Yep.
Figure out who the best people already are.
Yep.
Put a package in front of them that attracts them across. They then bring the business in themselves or they've already got the legacy relationships. So you're basically buying parts of the market you're bringing that talent in, so the relationships come in. You're obviously gonna have a window of non-competes,
restraints,
and like
yep,
and then, yeah. So then, but effectively, as long as you've got a big enough balance sheet, you can keep growing in any direction you want, as long as you carry on with the same methodology.
Honestly, the sky's the limit with this business, in a sense. I don't get me wrong, cash is king, right? I mean, without obviously capital, there will become obviously a point where it's like, okay, this isn't sustainable any longer. We had our best month on record in December, a seriously profitable month for us in December. That's hopefully going to roll out obviously throughout January, and the momentum will just continue to build from there. Just back to what you say, I never pull people out of businesses to bring any clients over, any candidates over. We don't need any clients. We've already got the accounts. You know, we've already, from a candidate point of view, well, that's...
But how you do it, that's the question. That was my question before. How do you get in, though?
Yeah.
So if you're a relatively new business for 2.5 years,
yeah,
how are you... Like, obviously, you can send... If things are going out to tender, great. But you've had, like you said, you've already been working with these companies prior to the tender.
Yeah, so bear in mind...
So how, what's your strategy for actually going, right, well, we're going to open up a new industry, new clients. Is it old school picking up the phone? Is it going out and meeting them? Is it LinkedIn?
It's everything.
What's your strategy?
Yeah, look, there's no real strategy in a sense, mate. It's all based on the individuals that we're speaking to, right? Being in the industry over here for 23 years, I've target mapped and market mapped my competitors, who I consider to be competitors and who I consider to be companies that I can look at potentially pulling resources from. That is absolutely, there's a strategy behind that. But when people are coming into this business, mate, we've been to Supreme Court 4 times in 2.5 years. Like, there's no other agency in Australia that's been to Supreme Court 4 times in maybe in the last 10 years, never mind 2.5 years. And every time we've gone there, it's over restraints of trade. And I don't know how many times we need to say it. I never bring anybody over. I would literally walk somebody if they walked into our office with a data sheet or any information from the previous role. It's not what we're about. It's not ethically what we're about, morally what we're about. We've gone out there. We've won the accounts. We need basically proven recruiters, billers, leaders to deliver on those accounts, and we'll all make money. Like, that's kind of our strategy. Is why do I do this on your own? You know, why work for a larger company where you're not appreciated? You know, there's no flexibility. There's no working from home. There's no 9-day fortnight. There's no monthly commissions. You know, you don't have a direct line to the owner of the business who could help you out financially or give you additional time off if you need it for personal. That's what our business is all about. And that's the message that's being pushed out to market. And I think that's why so many conversations are happening as a business. Now, where am I getting these people from, mate? Well, you know, I've got you guys, obviously, you know, the Hoxo Media, the course, obviously, that we jumped onto. You know, that's certainly increased our team's, I guess, vision when it comes to LinkedIn and obviously how they can be sourcing more candidates on LinkedIn. And then obviously you incentivize your internal teams, obviously, to go out there and actually start attracting talent. Well, then you've got an internal recruitment team that are just constantly hiring. You know, again, disrupt or be disrupted, mate. Yeah. That's kind of our strategy at the moment. But and I say that in a way that I don't want to come across as arrogant. I don't want people thinking that Corey, in any shape, way, or form, are literally trying to ruin business. You know, that's not what we're about. We're a business that's growing. We've got work, and we need people to help fill those positions, right?
You're just a different way of doing it. I don't think it's anything. I think it's brilliant. I think it's like, I'm a Man City fan, right? And the way we've gone out and grown over the last 20 years with the cash in, you can say we've broke rules and blah, blah, blah and all that. But, you know, proof is we've been able to be successful.
Absolutely.
Through it. Now, yeah, a lot of trophies. And our strategy has been to build, you know, handpick the best sporting directors from Barcelona and the best scouts and the best facilities. Like, you know, everything at Man City is top draw. Everything. Yeah. Everything. And even if we do get found guilty of the charges and we get relegated to League One or whatever's going to happen, we'll be back again in a few. Like, we're going to be back. There's no doubt about it, because the infrastructure is built now. Yeah. You can't take that away.
Yeah.
So it kind of reminds me of a recruitment version, if you like. Like, but if we go back to the early days, then how much capital do you need? If someone's thinking, I like the sound of this and I think I want to do this kind of business because it's different, how much capital do you need to begin with to be able to get? And then how do you sustain profit at such a high growth?
Profit's the challenge, right? I mean, ultimately, you're scaling, you keep hiring. That's always going to be the challenge. To your first question, it really depends on how quickly you want to scale, how big you want to grow. My first business, Design and Construct, I started with 5 grand. I grew that to Sydney, Melbourne, Brisbane, Perth, London. Then did brought in an investor. They rebranded to Building Careers Australia. They then rebranded to Evolve Talent. I started that business with $5,000. I started another business with a couple of mil in the bank. Like it really depends on ultimately what role are you going to play in the business? Yeah, are you going to be billing? Like my first month at Collar was October 2021 is when I sent out my first invoices. I had my own personal best in recruitment of 20 years that month. I billed $134,000 in perm fees. Back yourselves. Like you don't need a lot of money to go out on your own. You've got to have the belief. You've got to have certainly a good support network around you. And never lose sight of that no dickhead policy, right? Because as soon as you do go out on your own, you're guaranteed you're going to have people from all walks of life, friends from years ago, all wanting to come in, obviously, to join the story and obviously join the business. And the challenge, I think, as an entrepreneur is never losing sight of the why you're doing it. I know that's a cliche and it's easy for me to say, but for me, the reason why I'm doing this, I'm building this business to leave a legacy for my son, that's my why. That's why I get up out of bed every single day. I'm at home basically speaking to you today from home. I've just been upstairs building blocks with him before I came on this call. For me, that's the most important part. So you never lose sight of why. I know you could start a recruitment agency with $200 if you wanted to. You want to be strategic. Obviously, you need to pay to.
Yeah, of course, but you're not going to do what you've done.
Well, no, but I never intentionally set out to do this. I think for me, I was just fortunate enough to move over to Western Australia, move over to Perth at the time when COVID was still kind of rearing its head over here. The rest of the country was in absolute turmoil. I'd been in Melbourne at the time for 5 months during that 5 month lockdown. WA was buzzing. I think we maybe had two shutdowns for maybe 2 weeks max. So to be in an environment over here where I've just spent 2 years going through COVID on the East Coast, came over here, sun is shining, people are still catching up for basically coffees. That to me was what backed me to grow this business as quickly as it did. Nothing else. Not worried about finance, not basically worried about basically, where am I going to take this? It just all happened really overnight. So the first real 3 months to probably from January 22 actually was when real the scale started to happen. And you'll see from our LinkedIn, if you ever look at the company page on LinkedIn, look at the analytics behind that and look at the growth that we've experienced from that January 22. It's literally just an incline constantly without really any pauses along the way. And we don't see that slowing down in any time soon, mate.
So to get from about 100 people in 13 months ago to about 150, let's call it, with the new starters. So you've grown by 50%. There must be some, is there some attrition in there?
Of course.
How many people have you had to hire to grow by net 50?
Yeah, look, I guess the biggest challenge for us as a business has been dealing with all different personalities. And I've never really, from a growth point of view, I never, again, wanted to overpromise and underdeliver anybody that's coming into the organization. But we haven't got it right every single time. When we first started out, you asked me earlier about our associates, program. Basically, we run our very first associate program and we hired 4 from 8. And Jolene basically doing an incredible job. She's been promoted now into, obviously, her recruitment career started, but we only actually managed to get 1 successful trainee from our associate program. And it's something we decided to scrap because we actually felt we weren't giving them the time, the energy, or the effort that they really needed and they deserve. And we then changed our strategy to hiring people with more experience. And unfortunately, when you're hiring people with more experience, you sometimes get in recruiters that sometimes come with blinkers on or tunnel vision or not necessarily used to basically the speed that your business operates. So absolutely, we've obviously lost people along the way, but then we've also lost people for genuine reasons, for mental health, for drink and drug abuse, basically for gambling addictions. Like we've lost, people for deciding to basically up and leave to go to the other side of the world. We've lost people because they decided to go backpacking. In fact, two of the most we had a girl in Gold Coast. In fact, 2 people in Gold Coast have decided to go traveling. One's going one side traveling one way around the world, the other one's going around the other. And I was genuinely gutted when I found out both of them were actually resigning. So I got on the phone the very next day with both of them and sent them both an iPad. And they're both actually working while they're traveling for us now, basically doing some freelance, some candidate sourcing. And So, mate, we're not always going to get it right. We're a business. But, you know, what I am most proud of, mate, is, again, we're 2 years in a row, we're accredited, you know, accredited as a great place to work. But we actually made the great place to work top 50 workplaces for women list in Australia. So Collar is now recognized as one of the top 50 employers in Australia for women to work in. Now, there's some real power in that, mate. And that's something that's probably our biggest achievement to date. When you've got companies like Uber, MasterCard, you know, and these global brands that are recognized on that list, and then you've got a business that's only been established for 2.5 years, mate, that's some achievement.
A message from our sponsor, Vincere. Another of their products is known as Time Temp. This is your complete integrated timesheet workforce management solution. It's pre-built, it's pre-integrated, and it's designed so no matter how much your business grows, you'll be able to keep track of every single worker in one place in your CRM. All the changes inside Vincere will sync with Time Temp and will be fed back into your account, automating the entire process with two-way sync from your front to back office. Vincere's Time Temp enables you to create shift schedules, search available workers, shortlist and book assignments in seconds. They'll also allow you to track time, track leave, track expenses within their built-in payroll engine. It's called DoorClock. And then they've also got a mobile app for the on-the-go worker. If, again, you're looking to get more from your CRM, Vincere's Time Temp solution is another tool that enables you to perform more of your business-critical processes in your CRM. Find out if you could use Time Temp via the link in the show notes. Right, let's get back to it.
What would you say is evident in your business that got you to that?
I think more so just the hiring strategy around, mate, for us, we're hiring personality, right? And obviously skill set. And as it happens, it just so that our ratio at the moment is circa 20% male, 80% female. It's just the way that basically the lay of the land, the nature of the industry, the nature of the kind of revenue streams that we've gone for. As just historically, that's obviously how we've hired. And it's exciting, mate. You know, it's really exciting to get that acknowledgement and to get that recognition, as well as all the other awards. I think we won circa about, I think it was about 12 awards that we actually won last year. But, you know, we get a lot of grief on socials, right? You know, Collar always winning these awards. And it's like, guys, well, ask yourself a question. They're the ones we've won. Imagine how many we haven't actually won, right? That outnumbers the awards that we have actually won, I guarantee you that. So for us, mate, I guess it's always having that sanity check, right? We always want to be speaking to industry leaders like yourself and peers like yourself and finding out what's going on in the industry. How can we do things differently? How can we, you know, become a magnet for recruiters? Yeah, and you've got to evolve. You know, things we're looking at, we're...
It sounds like that's the key, isn't it? It sounds like that...
Yeah.
Is that your number one, like, mindset is about... making it the best place for other recruiters to join, and you know that will eventually lead to the rest.
Absolutely, you can't go any wrong. Like honestly, if you treat everyone as you would expect to be treated, this is a cliche, but if you treat everyone as you expect to be treated, and you then provide them with the best working environment, take out the consultant, the best working environment, then I don't think you're going to struggle to grow a business in the world of recruitment. I really don't. And again, this is. Now, I've been involved in now 15 recruitment startups. This is by far the fastest. It's been the most exciting. But the team around me are as loyal as the day is long, right? Because we're building this together. And again, you know, there's nothing in this business I would ever ask anyone to do that I'm not willing to do myself, nor are any of the other leadership team, obviously, within the organization. And that becomes infectious.
And what's a great working environment? What's the best working environment in your opinion? Like, what is it? Again, I'm looking for some like
collaborative, basic
things that other people can go. Yeah, are.
So I think you know one of the biggest challenges scaling a business, especially a national business, when you've got multiple offices and you've got multiple revenue streams all feeding into each state, you're always going to come across internal headaches, right? Conflicts. Well, I speak to this client that way. Yeah. I only deal with this client. So that has been absolutely the biggest challenge. And I think what it really comes down to is open. And again, we're not reinventing the wheel here, but it's communication, right? If we ever encounter any internal kind of conflict, conversations that need to happen, we just address it head on. If we need to jump on a plane to go and have that conversation face to face, and that might be a 5-hour flight, we'll do that because that's what's right for the business and that's what's right for that individual. So we're probably checking in with people far too often, but by us doing that, it allows us to keep our finger on the pulse. And though, I mean, I came back from Canada. We're launching in Canada. I got back from Canada. I was back to work on Monday the 15th. So I've been in the office, just over a week. I've been round to three offices. I've sat down with every single member of the team in those three offices. I've had one-on-ones with the majority of the East Coast. There's probably still maybe another 40 that I need to get through. But I've managed to do that in a week. Now, that's just what I need to do as the CEO of this business. I'm not sound checking what my leaders are doing. I'm not sound checking what Rachel's doing or, you know, what Tim's doing. I'm just giving an additional layer of support. Really good example. I've just come off the phone with my South Australia leader, and we're having a conversation tomorrow, basically with one of her team members. And I'll jump onto that 7 o'clock in the morning, my first call of the day, because it needs addressing. And it can't afford to wait till Friday, can't afford to wait till next week till the leader's there. I want it done, dusted. I want them to know, obviously, we're supporting them. And again, that is something that is really unique in the industry. People say they communicate really well, but they also overcomplicate it with the commission structures. They overcomplicate it by promoting inexperienced leaders. They overcomplicate it by promising, you know, basically shareholders agreements, equity offerings, you know, basically company vehicles and everything that doesn't actually materialize to anything. And I think for us as a business, it's, again, we're learning as we go, mate. And we've made mistakes along the way. You know, we've, you know, implemented new tech that hasn't worked. And, you know, basically we've moved to a new office, right? Expecting basically this office to go absolutely gangbusters. And it hasn't happened. Right, but you soldier on, and basically, you know, you're committed to something, you're committed to the course, you absolutely want to turn around and make it work. And again, mate, I think that's, we're humble, we're down to earth, right? We don't walk around as if we think we've got tickets on our back. You know, we were up for a few awards last year for New Agency of the Year Award. We didn't win New Agency of the Year Award. We take it on the chin, we roll on, and we go on to next year. You know, hopefully we get New Agency of the Year Award next year. It's things like that, mate, where, again, we're all human. But the business that we're building here, again, has that many personalities in it that, you know, I'm sure if you were to bump into them and you didn't know them from a bar or so, you bumped into one of our leaders, you would actually think they own the business because that's how passionate they would speak about Colin, you know?
Well, that's I've got two questions that are bumbling through my mind. One is, what do you do? Like, I really would love to know more about your day today. And then the second is, what's in it for... what is actually in it for these leaders to be so passionate and to feel like they own the company? Like, so I think we start with that question, then we'll go to you. So, like, what have you put in place as a package for senior leadership and anyone in the business to feel like, A, they're bought in long term, B, they can leave a business where they're already running a company, you know, some of these people, and they're now not to work for you. So there's got to be some incentive above and beyond commission and salary. Well, no, sure.
Just give me 2 seconds, mate. So I guess the reason why leaders are joining us is the career development opportunity that has been put in front of them. And the promotional opportunity as well. The fact that they're very much starting with a blank canvas without all that noise that's already been created. And they're going to be able to look back in 6, 12, 18 months' time and go, do you know what? I actually played an instrumental part in building that. I think that's been probably one of the biggest, probably one of the hot topics of conversations that I've been having when attracting people into the business. They also want to feel appreciated for the job well done. You know, I've got a leader in my business, mate, who spent 10 years at Hays. I don't mind calling this one out. 10 years at Hays. And in that time, had never once been headhunted. Not once had anyone ever reached out to them, basically, obviously trying to pull them out of Hays. And I just find that fascinating. And I still struggle. So you'd actually be surprised. A lot of these leaders that are actually joining new business, who've been there for a number of years, they've probably not ever wanted to leave or really had the intention.
So as I said before, mate, like one of the things I'm thinking is, what does your day look like? If you're running a team of over 150 or 150 people all over the country, you've got a young son that you're really vocal about the fact you want to be present in his life. Like, talk me through an average, like, what's a week like for you? And what different things do you get involved in?
Well, I mean, a typical day today, mate. I've been on a scoping session, basically for our build of our CRM, Salesforce, external project managers, speaking to external consultants today. I've done 3 interviews today. I've spoken to probably 10 people in the business today, all different elements of the business. So spoke a couple with my director of health and safety, director of wellbeing today about a new initiative, new strategy that we're putting in. Spoken to the aged care team, healthcare. We flew somebody over. And again, this is, we were talking about interviewing candidates, you know, for us, mate, we'd rather fly somebody from one side of the country to the other to meet us face to face, as opposed to do everything over Teams, which is what so many businesses do. So flew somebody over today who we met with, who we're talking to for another leadership role within the business. What else have I done today? I've caught up with, I guess, COO today. Our MD was back from annual leave today, so I had a good catch up with her. Mate, it's no one.
But how do you do it? Because whenever I speak to you, you're always on your mobile, you're in cars, like you never... This is the only time I've seen you sat still is when we do a podcast, right? So are you always mobile,
always on the go, mate? Yeah. So for me, it's again, yes, I might work like a lunatic when I'm working, but when I'm off, mate, I'm off. You know, like this is it's 6:10 at night here. It's probably one of the latest nights I've had in a long time. You know, in regards to still being basically, you know, working away. And normally what I'll do, I'll put a little bit further down and absolutely I jump back on because obviously there's stuff that I'll need to do and obviously I want to get action for the next day. But this is probably the easiest job from a stress level point of view that I've ever had, mate. And I know that might sound a little bit crazy, but I'm used to running like multiple businesses, I guess, right, all at the same time. So to do that all under one roof and know that I've got such an incredible leadership team around me, who are there to pick me up, you know, and we pick each other up along the way. That's the recipe to success. I honestly believe it. And again, you know, we've got a very clear no dickhead policy in the business. No one person, you've heard me say, no one person's bigger than this business. And if one of us is, you know, is struggling with a workload point of view, well, we all jump in and help each other out. So yeah, mate, look, so for
what,
me...
But are you like, you get up in the morning, genuinely, like simple stuff, like are you sat at a desk all day, or are you? Is most of your emails and phone? Is it all phone calls? Are you moving?
Yeah, I shy away from emails wherever possible, and I always do everything over the phone. I'm normally up anywhere between 4 and 5 o'clock every morning, and basically I'll go through my routine. I obviously meditate. I don't drink, so obviously, you know, I mean, in bed most nights, you know, tucked up in bed, fast asleep by 9 o'clock. I'm up at crack of dawn. I obviously get up, do my routine, jump in, do some work while little fella's still asleep. He'll then wake up. No, we get him up. I'll have breakfast with him, obviously, before I head out to work, depending on what time he wakes. I'm in the office. I'm always the first one in the office, and everyone can kind of testify that. Doesn't matter where I'm visiting or what office I'm going to, I'm always the first one. It's just who I am and what I'm about. And I'll get in there, basically get... Normally, the first couple of hours is really quiet time, so it gives me a lot of time to focus on the East Coast because they're normally 2 or 3 hours ahead of us. Focus on that, and then basically, you know, the WA time kind of kicks in. And I'm normally home, mate, basically by about 3 o'clock every day. Again, spend that time, obviously, with my little boy before he goes down to bed and as a family. And that it's working for us. You know? It just works for us as a unit.
So you say up at 4 or 5 a.m. and you don't drink at all. Is that a conscious decision you've made?
So, mate, the last time I had a drink would be 4 years ago, next month.
What drove that to
stop drinking? For me, I just wanted to be a better human, right? I think in recruitment, recruitment goes hand in hand with that. I went through a really tough divorce, basically, what, seven years ago, and for me, you know, I'd either be drinking or I wouldn't be drinking. I've always done that my whole life, right? And I just found that when I'm not drinking, I'm just a better human. I enjoy life more. I'm not. Although probably some of the staff might not necessarily testify to this, I find that I'm not as grumpy or as grouchy. But mate, if I look at what I've achieved in 4 years, yes, obviously the drinking is a big part of this, but I've got to obviously give myself a bit of a pat on the back as well because it's been a lot of hard work growing this business. But I look at what I've achieved in 4 years, it's next level, mate. Like I've had a family. Like basically, you know, I've got married, had a family. Well, obviously, we've all been through COVID, so we're part of that. obviously scaled not just one business to, I've actually now onto my third business inside 4 years. You know, basically Kona & Co, which was an incredible startup, did a management buyout, sold that, tailored resources, stepped into that second largest shareholder, stepped out of that to launch Collar. You know, and I actually attribute a lot of it to just being healthy, you know, not drinking,
right.
Eating healthy.
Would you say your relationship with alcohol was unhealthy? Were you drinking too much?
I think if you were to ask everyone, mate, if you're asking that question, then I honestly believe, hand on heart, you've probably got a problem with alcohol, right? These are it's a stigma that nobody wants to talk about. And I think
how much would you drink?
Oh, mate, I'd drink with the best of us.
Was it every day? Was it a weekend?
Yeah.
Like how?
Some days I'd go obviously a few days without drinking, but I think because of the role that I was in, what ended up happening towards my end of design and construct building, when we launched Building Careers Australia, I had 420 Consulting, Preston James, basically as shareholders. But there was always an excuse to go out for a drink. Right? There was always a meal to go through. There was always a catch up, and it was always done at a pub. So it just becomes part and parcel of your routine. And I think the icing on the cake for me, mate, was when, you know, going across to the UK and a fly across to the UK to the UK office, and you would hardly get any work done because, again, the whole basically social, you're just out of the pub. Like you're having meetings at pubs, and it's like, well, what is actually being done here? And again, for me personally, mate, I just knew that, I want for me to give myself the best opportunity of scaling a new business, which was Kona & Co at the time, I needed to put a pause on all of my personal, or basically everything external, all the distractions. So at that time as well, I took myself off Facebook, took myself off Instagram. I have no social media presence other than LinkedIn. That probably a lot of people listening will probably go, oh, well, that makes sense why he's so active on LinkedIn. But that's, for me, if I'm going to be on social media, mate, I want to be making money. I want to be generating
money. Yeah,
that's exactly how I am. If I'm going to spend my time liking, sharing, commenting on somebody else's posts, well, I want to make sure I'm getting my brand out there, and potentially I'm going to be generating revenue either for myself, for the business, or generating, obviously, leads or whatever it is. And that's just what I do, mate. Like, for me, I'm the happiest that I've ever been. I'm the healthiest that I've ever been. I don't miss drinking, mate. I've got one in, mate. Don't mind me, but a heap's normal for those people that don't drink alcohol, non-alcoholic beer. I think Pete Watson's a big advocate of these as well, mate.
Yeah.
You know, like you don't miss out. You just replace, right? So,
well, I've not drank for 30 days ish, and I'm not planning. I've got no end date on this time. I'm not saying I'm going to stop drinking forever or anything, but I'm not planning on drinking again for a while. Like, I've got no interest in it. It's just, I feel miles better. And I think I had a decent relationship with alcohol. Like, I would literally not touch it in the week, and I might have a couple of drinks on a Friday, a couple on a Saturday, a couple on a Sunday. But December became this, like, a bit like you, like there was always an excuse, and Guinness became part. Like, just in the fridge, I'd just open it at night. And I remember Boxing Day. So we were nearly, it was 23rd of January right now. So I genuinely felt in pain in my stomach on Boxing Day. I was sat there after drinking, and I was like, this ain't worth it anymore. And so I've just not bothered. I went to Dubai, which first holiday to not drink on, 2 weeks in the sun. And the sun is a trigger.
Yeah.
And my father-in-law loves a pint. And he was like, you know, Heineken's around the pool on the first day. And I'm just like, nah. And it was hard for a few hours just looking at them thinking, oh, they look good. But then it was the best holiday I think I've ever had.
Fantastic.
I felt present. I was up early. I was training. I still enjoyed myself. Like, I think when you're boozing, booze becomes part of the day. If like you're thinking, when's my next drink? Where can I sneak and get another drink? It's always like, I need another one. Whereas when you don't drink in around the pool, like you don't even need a drink that often. Like, you know, every time the waiter goes past, I'm like, I want another. Nah, I'm all right. Like, I'm just chilling with my daughter. Like, I don't need another drink. Whereas when you're on alcohol, it's like, yeah. And you think, how much stuff are you putting in? Like, it's not good.
Even down to the cost of associating, you know, never mind the hangovers obviously that come with it as well, right? But honestly, mate, I feel $1 million, healthiest that I've ever been. And I honestly believe, you know, you create your own opportunities in life and you create your own luck. And I'm just fortunate enough that I've not been in those kind of drunk situations where I've been able to capitalize on not every single opportunity that's presented, but
yeah.
I'd been more aware of those opportunities that are in front of me and actually done something about it and gone and executed, you know, whatever it is. And I think, you know, if you can always look back on those little wins along the way. And again, like, it's drinking, you know, it's not as if I had a drinking problem. You know, it's not as if I'm going to AA or anything like that. For me, it's just a conscious decision that me and drinking, I'm a better person when I don't drink.
How do you find the conversation with people when you say I don't drink? Because I think people's instant reaction is you must be an alcoholic. Like they look at you a bit weird. Like, you don't drink. Or do you even say that to people? Yeah, like, how do you communicate?
I don't drink. And the reason why I don't drink is because I just don't enjoy drinking. And most importantly, I'm building a legacy. I'm building something that's going to be around for generations to come. Right? I want to be at my absolute optimum A game every single day. Like we all know that's not going to happen. You don't know if Finn's going to keep me up half the night or keep me in a mandrel for half the night. I'm going to have a shit night's sleep and work's going to be challenging. But, you know, you do that while you're basically topping up with sauce and you're on the piss all the time. Well, you're asking for – it's a recipe for disaster, isn't it? You're also then potentially, going to be letting your game down as well when it comes to contract negotiations, you know, when it comes to hiring people. And there's businesses out there at the moment here in Australia that are literally flaunting the fact that, you know, they encourage alcohol in the business. They drink every single day. When they have a team meeting, they'll be having beers around the bar. And all for it, like whatever works for the business. But in my experience, it just doesn't work. Like we're dealing
with Do you think your own mindset around that optimal health mindset performance, I'm not saying everyone in the business is teetotal, but does that impact the culture and the way you guys run? No. Or does an office in Canberra be on the drink?
It's a really interesting question, mate. Absolutely. There's obviously, you know, consultants that want that environment and, you know, we facilitate that. We participate, basically. We've got social clubs. We've got, you know, obviously teams going out for lunches, obviously going on trips and team building exercise, everything that every other recruitment agency it does. And we have drinks, obviously, in the office. There's beers in the fridge. If you want to have a beer, absolutely go and have a beer. We just don't. What we don't do is go out drinking every single night or drink together. In fact, we've all got responsibilities. We've all got mortgages. Yeah. You know, we've all got families to basically to look after. And it's a cultural shift. If you're going in there saying this business is teetotal, 100%. But I don't go to these events, but I went to the Christmas party here in Perth. I was on the boat for, I think, 2 hours. And I went just to congratulate everyone. I'll get out of the way, mate. Like, you don't want the CEO kind of pondering around whether you drink or not drink. But I think that's something that is becoming, that is part of the recruitment landscape where too many business leaders are getting involved in these types of interaction with team members that is only going to cause headaches. But I've heard of an agency, and I won't name them, their Christmas party in December, there's only six of them in this business. They had four, either fired two, I need to get the full story, but I know this has happened. Four of that six have now left the business because of their Christmas party. Where you had the MD of this MD of this business fighting with these two IC, ripping shirts off, like all over alcohol. All over and basically nonsense. Drinking at a Christmas party. So this guy's now, you know, gone from a business of six recruiters to now a team of two or three or whatever it is. But yeah, you get the point that I make. Right?
It is nuts. And it's a really simple change. I mean, it's a difficult change, but it's a really simple change. That's for kind of, if there's a book called The One Thing, isn't there, which I've been looking at. And I think if I could change one thing in 2024, which will make the biggest impact to my life and business, is that if I just optimally knock that out.
Yeah.
Everything else gets infinitely easier. That's how I'm looking at it.
Yeah. Well, mate, final question.
Just
on that, if you do like Guinness, mate, I can highly recommend Guinness Zero.
I've got a fridge full of them right now. But the good thing is you can have one on a Tuesday night guilt-free and not give a shit. It's great. Like you're having an alcohol-free beer in the afternoon. Why not?
20 past six here, sun's still shining. Yeah, mate, why not? Yeah.
Why not? So my final question is, where are you heading now? So you're evolving every time we speak, and we will have you back on. I think it'll be an annual January. Let's get Ephraim back for the crowd. But honestly, like what does 2024 look like? If we're going to bring you back in 2025 in a January, which we will.
Yeah.
What's it going to look like for you?
These next 12 months are going to be certainly my biggest 12 months. In business, my biggest 12 months in recruitment. We've laid down the foundations now to really propel Collar to the spotlight that it deserves. And you know, the recognition around the number of placements, around the everything that we've done around the awards and the well-being and the strategy is now really going to start coming to fruition. The technology, the new CRM launches Q3 of this financial year. So around about April, May time is when we're going to be going live with that. That's going to be an absolute game changer, not just for us as a business, but for the Australian recruitment landscape. Just continue to have fun along the way, Sean, and make sure, again, that we're not losing sight of the why we're doing this. But most importantly, make sure that, you know, we're delivering on everything that we say we're going to do. And that in 12 months time, you can call me out on anything that I've said on this, you know, on this podcast. And again, I'll be accountable for that. But I can honestly say, hand on heart, every podcast, every interview that I've done over the last 24 months, I've delivered on everything that I'm saying. I'm not just, you know, sat here for the sake of, you know, just saying things for the sake of it. Like I've got so much passion, so much drive to turn this into a $1 billion business. And I honestly think we'll be achieving that within inside the next 5 years. That's the goal.
So
that's the plan.
How many heads do you think you'll be in a year?
So we'll be circa 200, basically in 12 months time. And then the period over the next 18 months, we'll get up to circa about 300. Now, again, bear in mind, we're just opening Canada. The UK opens in March this year. So for any listeners out there in the UK, if you're keen to obviously have a conversation with regards to Collar, happy to obviously have a conversation. So Canada, UK. And the strategy behind that, mate, is to supply nurses and back and forth, Australian nurses back into the UK, UK nurses over to Australia, same with Canada. So again, that's more of a strategy behind that. But we want to continue to win awards this year. We want to continue to be seen as a recruitment agency of choice, not just for candidates, clients, but most importantly, obviously for the recruiters. And again, mate, just make sure, get my man bun back. Obviously, you've kind of taken me over now. I've chopped my hair off and you've obviously gone with the extensions, which is nice to see. But mate, again, just make sure that I'm... obviously having fun and not losing sight of obviously why I'm doing what I'm doing, I guess. I look forward to it. But honestly, Sean, thanks for all your support, guidance and mentorship as well over the time. Myself and the team are really excited to be working with yourself and Huxo for many years to come, mate. So thanks for everything. Thanks, mate.
Thank you as always for listening to today's show. I truly hope that you got value from it. Honestly, it's the only reason I take time every week to ensure that my audience, you guys, future and existing recruitment owners, you're learning from each other to make this industry that I love so much stronger. And today's episode is brought to you by my business, Huxo. I'm the CEO and founder, and we're on a mission to help brand recruitment agencies and their people better. I want to help people have the tools to stand out in the most competitive markets in the world. We're currently working with over 350 recruitment agencies and 5,000 of their consultants right now, helping them to build their personal brands, to consistently win more business, attract talent, and just become that go-to recruiter in the market. Now, we do have a huge coaching program, but a lot of people don't know we also manage the brands of a lot of founders, and we can do the rebrand of that company organizational piece as well. So if your recruitment agency either needs help to look and sound exactly how you want it to, or your leadership and consultant level need to get out there and drive more traffic back to that website, to the business, and start using LinkedIn to generate more revenue, then you should definitely be reaching out to us. If that sounds of interest, please do visit www.hoxomedia.com or drop me, Sean, a personal message on LinkedIn. I love hearing from RAG listeners. I would love to talk to you. Look forward to it. So I'll see you again next week with another episode. Catch you soon.